Espanol. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Fausmeyfer, Dina Geisler, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alcock, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Mary Conlon. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. This program has been brought to you today by the Tom Pastilio and Vicki Conlon team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, hosts of the Jazz Loft Summer Music Series in Stony Brook Village. The Tom Pastilio and Mickey Conlon team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate may be reached at tomandmickey.com. We thank them for their support of WUSB Stony Brook.
And it is just about 6 o'clock, and you are still tuned to WUSB Stony Brook. It's a Tuesday evening time once again for Off the Wall. A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Senior with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
How you doing?
Pretty well. How are you?
I'm exhausted. I'm totally running on fumes here. Just trying to control the things I can control. Meaning on the board here, not in life. That ship has sailed.
Sounds good.
Yeah, right now I'm trying to read a New York Times story, and it's telling me I have to subscribe, and I already do subscribe, so it's I'm having a little battle online here.
Okay. Well, I can vouch for you.
Yeah, that's not going to do it. That's not good enough. It doesn't... You know what it is? I'm signed in to a different account on the web, and it's getting... I have to open a different browser and load the story that way, and there it is. No, now it still doesn't recognize me. Damn it. I really hate this. I really hate this, you know. You have to pay for every bit of information you see these days. I already do pay for it, for one thing, New York Times, is that. But also, come on already. It's the World Wide Web. It's supposed to be open to everybody. You're supposed to be able to read what's on the web without having to pay all these toll booths. All right, you know what? I just won't read that story. Yeah, there you go. Censorship. Uh-huh. Controlling speech. Now people won't be educated. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Was it a good story?
It was a great story. Oh, my God. It was one of the best stories. And we'll never hear it, because next week it'll be old news, and nobody cares about old news. All right. Closing that browser window. It's gone. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't get it back now.
Somebody might care since you brought it up.
Yeah, you know what? What am I going to do? What can I do?
All and... Well, anything else. Yeah.
So we had fun.
All you can do in anything else.
We had fun the last few days.
A lot of fun.
Oh, boy. Ran an event. We'll talk about this more on tomorrow night's show on the other station. But we ran this little event. Well, I wouldn't call it a little event. For 1,000 people is really not a little event. But, there are bigger events, and it has been bigger in the past. But with, you know, all the COVID anxiety and various traumas that the nation or the human race are going through right now, it was different, very different, different location, college campus instead of a hotel. But the mood was awesome. The mood was what the hacker spirit is all about. And we've been working on this now for about 3 years. It's good to finally get it done and to see that we can get it done and to, I guess, plan how the future will unfold. So, yeah, we've been tearing our hair out, in case you couldn't tell, over the past few weeks, just getting things together. And so many, so many other people joined forces to do that, to make it possible. And I have to say, you know, it wouldn't have happened without so many of them, without any individual's absence would have been felt, let's put it that way. And every individual that was there added something unique that nobody else could add. And it's called Hackers on Planet Earth, the Hope Conference. That's what we do every 2 years. And since 2020 was 2020, we couldn't do it then except online. We had a virtual conference, which was an awesome virtual conference. I think the first really good virtual conference anywhere that year, because everything was pretty lousy up to that point. Instead of having the normal 3 days, we made it 9 days so that we could have a little bit more fun. And it put everybody in a much better mood. So this was the first time we actually got together in person since 2018. So, yeah, and a brand new venue. We had been going to the Hotel Pennsylvania. Some of you might know the Hotel Pennsylvania. It's right across the street from Penn Station. Was right across the street from Penn Station in New York City, and is currently being demolished because its owners are incredibly greedy people that want to build a massive office tower and shut the rest of you out of it. Having a hotel wasn't doing it for them. Having something people could afford to stay in when they visit New York, nope, not in their interest. But leasing it out to, what, Facebook or Google or somebody like that, and having security guards keep everybody out, that's more their speed. Well, ain't our speed, and we did something different this past weekend.
Yeah, throughout the two events, you just listed the 2020 and 2022.
Mm-hmm.
It just proves, like, we're capable of galvanizing around transformation, you know, and like changing our conditions and methods, you know, how we're communicating and sharing.
It's a human race, Kyle. That's what humans do. We evolve. We change. We get with the times, you know?
This, like, amorphous idea of hackers on planet Earth
mm-hmm.
continues on in time and space, and we really...
You can knock us down. We'll get up again.
We needed
that. You're never going to keep us down. Never.
Never, ever.
No.
Yeah, and we needed that. That's a good jolt of...
What do you mean, copyright? What did I say?
This is a radio station. Yeah, WUSB, Stony Brook. And, yeah, we can say whatever we want and be as clear and direct as possible.
I'm just going to do it again. I knocked my headphones into two pieces, and Kyle just put them back together again. I was gesticulating, okay? I do that. I'm sorry. It's radio. You just gesticulate. That's what you do. And sometimes the wire comes out when I do that, and thank you for putting it back together.
Well, it's stupid for being removable in the first place.
It was better the first time. It's not quite as good now, but it's fine. It's fine. I'll deal. Hey, we missed the hearing on Thursday. We were so crazy that we didn't... It was a primetime hearing, too. But, you know, we our event was at St. John's University. Yes, that's right. We cheated on Stony Brook, went to a different university. But you know what? Our basketball team is so much better. And I'll hear from Matt about that later. But basically, we stayed in dormitories. And I can't remember the last time I stayed in a dormitory. But it's pretty much what you expect, you know.
Well, it's more apartment-like.
Yeah, apartment-like. Yeah. They were the good dorms.
I mean, there's various types of dorms. Mm-hmm. So it was like maybe, sort of a town...
Townhouse, they call it.
Yeah, but inside, it's still a dorm.
It's not a townhouse inside, no. It's,
Definitely reminded me.
But no TV, okay? And you wind up, bunking with somebody if you don't tell them not to. Not to sign you up with somebody else. So coincidentally, we wound up in with each other, so that was good. But also two other people who we also happen to know because, well, we asked to be with them. So it worked out. Not two others in the same room. Other people had different rooms in the suite.
It's a suite of rooms.
We don't have to explain this. That's not the issue. The issue is we went to another university, St. John's, and
Stony Brook has the same type of setup.
Every college has the same type.
They have like probably five more types.
We're not on trial here. Why do I have to explain this? No, it's basically a dormitory. We stayed in. It was better than a hotel, I thought, because it was so close. You just get up and walk across a field, and you're at the conference. But we had hotels too. They were, you know, about a mile away. So you had to, figure out how to get to the campus from there. No big deal. Of course, having it in a hotel is different, but you know what? It also adds all kinds of headaches, that we didn't have this time. This time it was all about the conference. It wasn't about people getting drunk and, causing scenes and things like that. It was about, okay, here you are at the conference. Whatever you do outside, that's on you. But here at the conference, we're doing the conference. And what great talks we had. They're all going to be online. We had a bit of an issue with Google shutting down our stream because they didn't like what we were doing. We'll talk about that again tomorrow.
That's a whole
as well.
Other crazy
thing. Don't trust Google people. Just don't ever trust them. Oh, my God.
They're super judgy.
They are. Well, I mean, their computers are. Their computers... just will shut you down if you issue the wrong string of text or show an image that they don't like or anything. It's just, and everybody is constantly shaping their behavior so that they don't displease Google.
Oh, okay, here, I got it, E. They put the F-U in fun.
Wow. Yeah, okay, all right. I guess that's something. Just to figure out the N is for them. Anyway, we missed the hearing last Thursday because we were going nuts, getting everything prepared. Prime time, we didn't have a TV set in the dormitory, so we couldn't watch it there. I'm going to watch it tonight, actually. But it was the last one of this series. Maybe there'll be more later on, but I do want to talk about it. I'm not educated enough right now to be able to talk intelligently about it. Some people might say that's my default state, maybe so, but... I do know Trump was giving a speech today because you had it on the TV set for some reason. It's funny, if you look at Newsday, our local newspaper here, The headline reads, Trump back in Washington repeating election lies. And it's just, it's great that everybody is so honest about this, that everyone just says, yeah, you know, he's lying. This is all lying, you know, making up things. It's nothing different. But for some reason it was on C-SPAN, and we're listening to the same old lies all over again.
He was just running through just as fast as possible, but, you know, with an occasional quintessential meander into bluster and I guess that's maybe a nervousness, I hope, but I don't know, he wants to come across as having all sorts of confidence mm-hmm. going into 2024 already, before even the midterms. So, yeah, I don't know. It just was a reminder to look away, but, you know, not look away either, because this stuff has to be dealt with.
Did we need a reminder? Did anybody forget about this? Is something we're in danger of?
Look, you know what? You know when you're tired and you're sore?
Like now? Yeah.
And you splash the cold water on your face. You know, you need a little, you know, you got to get that jolt of, like, wake up, you know, just.
You think that's America? America needs that.
Well, yeah, I do, because I'm not going to rest on any kind of laurels.
Mm-hmm. No, rest on, what, is it the tree? Is that what people rest
is
on?
Is it a tree?
The laurel? I don't know what that is. And how would that work? You get up in the tree and you rest in the tree somehow? I'm going to look this up. If I'm allowed to do that without having to pay for it, can I do that? Google, will you let me do that? I'm going to, okay, a tentative yes here.
It's good information.
While I'm looking up what the hell resting on laurels means, maybe you could talk about the our newest visitor to the garden. We have a rabbit now.
Yeah, it's official. This rabbit's been visiting the garden.
He stays in the same place. Basically, he doesn't get in the garden because we have a fence, but he sits outside the garden in the same exact spot and just sits there all day long. Until you walk by him, he'll look at you, then he'll bolt, and boy, he can move fast. I think it's a hare, not a rabbit. But regardless, I don't know what his game is. He's just sitting there, not doing anything.
He's hanging out by a vehicle.
He hangs out by a particular tire. And maybe he hides under the vehicle sometimes, but that's his favorite spot. But he doesn't do anything. And I wonder, is he planning something?
I think he's from the manufacturer.
Of the car?
Yeah.
Well, it's not a rabbit, though. I mean, we do have a rabbit, but it's not there, so maybe he's confused.
No, it's like, spy. Yeah. No, it's a friendly bunny. Little one. I think he's waiting to get big enough to try to get into the little fence that seems to be keeping it at bay. But it also doesn't seem too interested in attacking anything. So I don't know if it's a pest rabbit. I think it's just sort of new to the area.
Okay, I found a site that explains what resting on laurels means, but first I have to read their privacy statement. We and our partners store and or access information on a device such as cookies and process personal data, such as unique. Why do I need to do this just to read a sentence? For God's sake. Oh, you know what? I just have to agree, right? Kyle, we don't have time. I can't read all of this. There's more options. I can click on that, but I'm just going to agree. And God help me, whatever happens. Okay, I've agreed. Now I have a blank screen. I literally just have a blank screen now. That didn't help. What did I agree to? I agreed to nothing. Ugh.
I'm not convinced you're using a real computer.
No, there it is. Why do we say resting on your laurels? Here we go. You ready? In ancient Greece, victorious athletes were presented with laurel wreaths to wear. They were, and still are, signs of great accomplishment, unless you start resting on them. To rest on your laurels means that you get lazy or complacent about what you could achieve because you're too busy basking in the memories of former glories. It's a phrase that continues to have significant relevance in the world of sport. Yeah, you may have won the World Cup, but don't rest on your laurels. Good quote. Which is also where it originated. In the world of sport, I think is what they're trying to say. It originated in the world of sport, not in the World Cup. Winning competitors in the ancient Greek Phthian Games, which is a forerunner of the Olympics, founded roughly in the 6th century BC. If you remember the beginning of this sentence, winning competitors were given wreaths made of the aromatic laurel leaves as a symbol of their triumph. It was believed that the god Apollo declared the laurel plant sacred after his true love, the nymph Daphne, was turned into one. Boy, things were weird back then. That is why Apollo was depicted wearing a crown of laurels. As the Phthian Games honored Apollo, and I think we should revive those, by the way, because that way you get the rights cheap. A laurel wreath was the appropriate prize for a victor, or laureate. Oh, my God. Wow. Worlds collide. Now, Nobel laureate. Oh, it's all laurels. Mm-hmm. We're not that complicated, are we? You can figure us out pretty easily if you just look at a few words and tie them together.
Did I mention I like sport? I like sport. I like athletics and stuff. So it's probably a laurel tree for sure.
Yeah, well, that's where they got the laurels.
Yeah, you make a wreath, and that's it. But yeah, it's an allusion to, I guess, Greek myth or Roman myth.
Well, the Romans borrowed the idea and began borrowed an awful lot, didn't they? And began presenting laurel wreaths to victorious military commanders. But there was no implication that resting on them was bad. Roman generals could spend the rest of their careers savoring their past successes. The negative connotation and the saying came about millennia after the decline of the ancient Greek and Roman empires. So,
if only they were saying it back then.
Yeah, maybe we'd still be living under their rule of the Roman Empire or whatever. Okay, so we wasted quite a bit of time on that, didn't we? So Trump back in Washington didn't really say anything new.
Oh, you're going to talk about it?
No, I don't want to talk about
it. Then don't.
Why was it blaring on the TV for hours?
You are going to talk about it.
And he also spoke hours after Pence gave a speech in nearby in Washington. Yeah, I wish they had crossed paths. I wish, you know, they'd both been, you know, crossing the intersection at the exact same time.
I wish they'd flatten each other's tires.
Maybe they'll do that. It's anything goes. You heard what happened to Lee Zeldin. Lee Zeldin got attacked.
What was that? I was too busy.
Oh, my God.
I didn't get any of the details of that, but did he get slapped or something?
It was a place called Perrenton, New York, because he's running for governor of New York. You might not know this, but Lee Zeldin is our representative in the House of Representatives, you know, the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. Well, he has been serving in that position for quite some time, but he doesn't really show up for work, ever, except maybe, you know, to echo whatever ex-President Trump tells him to do or told him to do when he was president. You know, things like anti-women's rights, anti-gay rights, anti-minority rights, yeah, everything, just everything bad this guy can be counted on to show up for that, but nothing else. No town meetings, no answering to what it is he actually does. And he doesn't show up for work, as I said, because he's running for governor against Kathy Hochul.
Yes, his benevolence.
He was accosted by some crazy guy upstate. 43-year-old man approached him as he gave a speech. It's outside Rochester, he had a pointed plastic object. I've been hearing all kinds of reports about this, that he had a knife. It's not a knife, it's a pointed plastic object. I mean, it's still a terrible thing. He kept saying, you're done. He was overpowered, fortunately. And, of course, you know, there's nothing else to say in a situation like that, except this is terrible, this should not happen. You know, we have to protect people who are running for office, or protect people, period. It was terrible. And I wish that's how Lee Zeldin would have played it, because this is something that, you know, unites people from all different political persuasions. But he had to turn it into a political thing. He had to turn it into a political thing, saying, yeah, this guy is going to be released from jail, and that's why we have to change this, that's why you have to elect me. You know, making people think, did you hire the guy or something? Because it's a little too convenient. You know, it's just the way he's playing it is not like a human being would play something like that. You know, just basically getting right back on your feet and resuming your sentence and saying, see, that's what I'm talking about. I want to read something from a newspaper called the Times Union. I think it's somewhere out of state by Chris Churchill. Where basically it's entitled, it's an opinion piece, for Lee Zeldin, A Chance to Change the Subject. Underdog political campaigns usually need to be buoyed by outside events if they're going to pull off an upset. And unfortunately for Republican gubernatorial nominee Lee Zeldin, who is certainly an underdog, recent happenings have been hurting rather than helping his campaign. The U.S. Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade was a political gift to Governor Kathy Hochul, who in this generally pro-choice state, I would say fervently pro-choice state, but whatever, has been promising to protect abortion access while claiming Zeldin's pro-life stance makes him a candidate from the extreme fringes. The congressional hearings into the January 6, 2020, I'm sorry, 2021 riot, that was their typo, by the way, not mine, at the Capitol, are giving Democrats an opportunity to highlight Zeldin's vote against certifying presidential election results from Pennsylvania and Arizona. Again, painting him as a far-right extremist and putting the congressman from Long Island on the defensive. So, it was no surprise that Zeldin grabbed the chance to change the subject. And as you may have heard, the 43-year-old man approached Zeldin as he gave a speech outside Rochester, allegedly tried to stab him with a pointed plastic object. The assault certainly pales when compared to the tragic killing of a police officer in Rochester, just 11 miles away on that very same day. But the assault on Zeldin was an ugly moment for sure that highlighted the physical dangers faced by elected officials. And yet the assailant walked free within hours, released without bail after being charged with attempted assault in the second degree. Although I believe he was charged with a federal crime, which apparently it's a federal crime to assault a congressperson. So there's that at least. But he was released without bail. Released without bail after attacking a congressman. Seriously? With that, Zeldin has had the event his flagging campaign needed, a chance to change the subject, at least to favorable ground. Democrats accused him of trying to exploit the attack for political gain, but of course, that's what campaigns from either side of the political aisle do. What else would we expect? To be clear, I'm not suggesting Zeldin was in any way pleased by the attack. I'm sure the moment was alarming and frightening for the congressman, and was especially so for his wife and twin daughters. Given how close the guy was able to get before anyone intervened, the assault could easily have been far more tragic. Still, the moment was certainly a boost for Zeldin's campaign. After all, Zeldin has been playing up the sense of heightened public danger that so many New Yorkers feel, and linking the sense of disorder to the controversial bail reform laws enacted by New York Democrats. And here, out of the blue, was an event that seemingly confirmed the arguments he and other Republicans have been making. It's a shame that New York's cashless bail law means that this person can attempt to stab anyone, let alone a member of Congress, at a campaign event running for governor, and be released within hours, Zeldin said during a Fox News interview. There's no doubt that with some of these offenses that are being committed in New York, the judge should have discretion to keep somebody behind bars. Zeldin wasn't without a point. That's the nicest thing I think I've ever said about Zeldin on the air. Zeldin wasn't without a point. The attacker should not have walked free for an alleged attack on an elected official plainly captured on video, and it was right that a subsequent federal charge for assaulting a member of Congress with a dangerous weapon means the suspect will be held pending a hearing. But is his release a legitimate reason to bash New York's version of bail reform? While I don't necessarily oppose giving judges more discretion in cases like this one, a key point is that he was released because he faced only a relatively low-level charge. As New York Times noted, the Monroe County District Attorney could have charged the attacker with a violent felony, which would have qualified the case for bail consideration and potentially have kept him locked up. That the district attorney in question, Sandra Dorley, was listed as a co-chair of Zeldin's campaign. Yeah, let me repeat that. That the district attorney in question, Sandra Dorley, was listed as a co-chair of Zeldin's campaign and conferred with him immediately after the attack will give conspiracy theorists something to chew on. I don't consider myself a conspiracy theorist, but my God, really? The district attorney, you know, if you get attacked by somebody, all right, does the district attorney call you to say, what should I do? How should I handle this? Huh? And that district attorney also the co-chair of your campaign? Okay, yeah. I don't think you need a conspiracy theorist to say, that stinks. There's something wrong there. I won't suggest, going back to the column here, I won't suggest that she deliberately undercharged the attacker to hand Zeldin an issue. But it's true that a tougher charge would have denied his campaign a badly needed chance to go on offense. Zeldin did not let the opportunity go to waste. On with the campaign. And that column, really well-written column, I think, by Chris Churchill in the Times Union. And that is something. You might not have heard that part of the story, that there's that connection there. But, you know, all kinds of attacks are wrong. And, you know, that's what I think people have been saying throughout this whole January 6th investigation, that this kind of thing is not who we are, individually or as a group.
Well, it's the whole point of having the political system, is that you don't have to resort to violence. You can solve it through discussion, debate, voting, and legislation, and judges. I mean, we're losing ourselves if we resort to that to enable or other forms of corruption evidence of the disintegration of our democratic republic or whatever the hell we think we are.
Yeah, what are we anyway?
Why are we here? What's the point?
Well, okay, so let's go a little north then to Canada. By the way, a lot of Canadians showed up to our conference.
A lot of people from all over.
A lot of people from all over the world. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Fantastic to make acquaintances and try to have a little bit of a chat when we could, with all the things going on.
Pope Francis is in Canada, and he's there to apologize for the Catholic Church's role in Canada's residential school system and the horrible abuses that took place. Full-throated denunciation of a decades-long policy of forced assimilation that aimed to strip Indigenous children of their culture and traumatize generations continues to have effects now. Speaking at the site of a former residential school south of Edmonton, Alberta, the Pope said he was deeply sorry for actions by many in support of the colonizing mentality of the powers that oppressed the Indigenous peoples. He also expressed sorrow over the school's systemic marginalization, denigration, and suppression of Indigenous people, languages and culture, the physical, verbal, psychological, and spiritual abuse children suffered after being taken from their homes at a young age, and the indelibly altered family relationships that resulted. I, myself, wish to reaffirm this with shame and unambiguously. I humbly beg forgiveness for the evil committed by so many Christians against the Indigenous peoples, said Pope Francis. I mean, that's an apology. That's really an apology. Does it fix things? Obviously, no. It doesn't fix things. But it is an apology, and that means something.
Yeah, absolutely struck the right tone. I was so happy to hear that. And the other thing that struck me about this is that there's maybe, I don't know where I was hearing it, but just if there is a critique of this that he's speaking for himself, he's not actually issuing this on behalf of the entirety of the church or something. He both represents it, but he can also direct it and take it, perhaps in moments unwillingly, in new directions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the expectation. And when he began as a pope, I think that was something that he tried to make clear. So, yeah, maybe he doesn't officially represent the church.
He officially represents the church. He is the Pope. He's as official as you can get.
No, but
he doesn't necessarily speak for everybody.
No, in the statement, there was some, I don't know what I heard, but there was some critique of it, as the wording just not being quite official enough.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also recognition of this being the second time, he said, the second time, I believe, he had tried to apologize for this. But anyway, you're right. It isn't. It's beside the point. It is totally an apology. And I just hope it brings about more open discussion of it. And I think there are other areas of human rights that the church itself might use similar tact and really teach by doing about forgiveness and compassion in the craziness of the world we're in.
Well, it's important that we here in the States also understand what it was that was happening up there in Canada and how the Canadian people are dealing with that, how the Indigenous people have been affected and are dealing with that to this day, how it parallels our history as well. And maybe we can learn something from them. Maybe we can all learn from each other. Certainly so much room for improvement. But some of the commentary from people up there, Phil Fontaine, a residential school abuse survivor and former chief of the Assembly of First Nations, said it was an achievement on the part of the Indigenous community to convince Pope Francis to come to a First Nation community and humble himself before survivors in the way he did today. It was special, and I know that it meant a lot to a lot of people, and every time he said the word sorry, people would start applauding. Chief Desmond Bull of Lewis Bull Tribe said during a news conference, "We may all need time to fully absorb the gravity of this moment. If you want to help us heal, stop telling us to get over it. We can't get over it when intergenerational trauma impacts every youth and every member, every family who has had a residential school survivor. Instead of getting over it, I'm asking you to get with it. Get with learning about our history. Get with learning about our culture, our people, who we are." Well said. And, you know, it's times like this, I am so happy that we have Canadian television. We managed to get a Canadian dish, and we're able to pull in signals, and we can see APTN, the Aboriginal People's Television Network, and see their daily newscast and just try and be up on these things. I wish that was carried in this country on every cable system. I wish we could see CBC on every cable system in this country. Why can't we? They see our networks. They see everything we put out. We have so much to learn. So much to share as far as experiences and opinions and things like that, and perspectives. This is something that I'm not even sure it's being covered very much in this country. I know it's been on the news a little bit, but this is front and center in Canada.
There's a lot more channels, and there's a lot more networking and alternative media, I would say, where this is going on, and then of course local radio, which we're a part of here at WSB Stony Brook, and all over in the country, smaller radio stations are communicating in communities that need to connect and don't otherwise hear their own stories, mm-hmm. and don't otherwise have ways to tell their own stories, because funny thing, when other people are telling your stories, sometimes or telling for a community, they don't often get to certain parts of it, and anyway, little by little, it's becoming much more better understood in America. I mean, it was very much glossed over, the details of it, the details of who and where these communities are and what they've endured and what they face today. And then, like, okay, well, what are our relationships and what, you know, specifically are they saying? Over and over again, you hear about treaties, you know, especially in America. And I don't think non-Native people in America really understand any of the treaties.
But you had that book that basically goes through all the treaties and how every single one of them was broken, right?
Yeah, that's a book by a Canadian author about... the treaties in Canada specifically, and so there's the same situation as you were implying. And anyway, it's part of our history, but it was so simplistic, at least for me. I just can only hope it's getting better, and that extends to media and why supporting smaller stations and less consolidation can create opportunities in the market for these kinds of I don't know, I guess we refer to them as reservations and, you know, but they're neighborhoods. They're your neighbors and, you know, they have different, status in this country, but certainly are who we are. And I think that embrace and understanding and then like any kind of reconciliation should be like mm-hmm. a number one priority if we're going to be anything like as united as we want to be or aspire to be. You know?
There's so much we have to learn, and I'm ignorant of so much of it myself. I was never taught, but we need to know the difference between things like First Nation and Indigenous and Indian and who lives on reservations and who doesn't live on reservations and how this came about in the first place. The differences between Native culture in the U.S. and in Canada and throughout the world. Indigenous culture is always something that is fascinating and that we can learn from, and there are so many parallels, and it's just all glossed over, and that itself is a crime. A couple of the comments, though. This is from Chief Tony Alexis of the Alexis Nakota Sioux Nation. He said it was validation that this really happened for the apology to be heard by non-Indigenous people, but the Pope needs to follow up with action and can't just say sorry and walk away. Evelyn Corkmaz, a school survivor, said, I've waited 50 years for this apology, and finally today I heard it. Unfortunately, many family and community members did not live to see it due to suicide or substance abuse, but I was hoping to hear some kind of work plan for ways the church would be turning over documents and taking other concrete steps. And Chief Vernon Saddleback of Samson Cree Nation said, I have a lot of survivors and thrivers in my community who are happy to hear the Pope has come to apologize. Words cannot describe how important today is for the healing journey for a lot of First Nations people. The Pope apologizing today was a day for everyone in the world to sit back and listen. I think that pretty much says it. So, history.
Yeah, really, really stirring stuff. So that was a really pleasant article or occurrence, you know, just after a long weekend.
Yeah, after a long weekend, but definitely a long bunch of decades, if not longer, for so many people.
Centuries, yeah.
Oh, look at this. Russia's quitting the International Space Station. Did you hear about this? After 2024, Russia says it's going to leave the International Space Station, and that means that, Russia will not be a part of this cooperation. This is not what I want to see. I mean, I know Russia's up to a lot of bad things right now in Ukraine, and we're all condemning their actions. But continuing to become isolated as a pariah and to be looked down upon by the rest of the world, and to just have this hostility build and build, it's not leading anywhere good. It really is not. So the future of the cooperation between the U.S. and Russia has grown very uncertain. As the new head of Russia's space agency announced, Russia would leave the International Space Station after its current commitment expires at the end of 2024. The decision to leave the station after 2024 has been made, said Yuri Borisov, who was appointed this month to run Roscosmos, a state-controlled corporation in charge of the country's space program.
Why are they leaving?
Government appointment. You can't be surprised. Why? I have to read into this article a little bit more. I would imagine probably because of the current situation in the world of hostility. It came. The pronouncement came during a meeting between Borisov and President Vladimir Putin. Borisov told Putin that Russia would fulfill its commitments through 2024 and turn its focus to an unbuilt, independent space station. I think that by this time we will begin to form the Russian orbital station. And Mr. Putin had this to say. Good. Starbucks in Farmingville is unionizing. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, hang on. That's a big story, too. Workers at a Farmingville Starbucks have voted to unionize, making them the third store on Long Island to do so since May. With 13 ballots in favor and one against, Tony, employees at the coffee chain location at 2280 North... I hope his name isn't Tony. At 2280 North Ocean Avenue, voted to be recognized as part of Workers United New York, New Jersey Regional Board. Is that the best thing to come up with? Workers United, New York, New Jersey Regional Board? How about Long Island? How about some representation for just Long Island?
Don't call me no scab.
It's an affiliate of the Service Employees International Union. And there's a name, Service Employees International Union.
SEIU.
You can say it.
Come on, they're a fixture.
Flows off the tongue.
Fixture.
Yeah, what was the other one I said, Cobb? Do you even remember?
No.
I know it had New York, New Jersey. I'm looking at it. I don't remember it as I'm looking at it. New York, New Jersey Regional Board. No, wait, it's only half of it. Workers United, New York, New Jersey Regional Board. Anyway, okay, getting back to this. Baristas at the location filed a petition to hold a vote in late April before engaging in a nearly month-long mail-in election process. The votes were counted Wait, why did it take them so damn long? The vote was in late April, and then it was a month-long mail-in election process. Okay, fine. That brings it to the end of May. It's the end of July now. What happened to June? and the rest of July. Anyway, the votes were counted today by National Labor Relations Board representatives. Officials with Starbucks could not immediately be reached for comment. I mean, come on, you reached them. You called them. You know their phone number. They just didn't give a comment. You reached them. You emailed them. You called them. You accost them in a parking lot, whatever. I'm sure that you reached them. They just don't want to talk about it. Let's say it that way.
No, they just said,
coffee. It's burning.
It just, they don't drink coffee. It just makes it seem like you didn't do your job. I'm not chastising Newsday here, but, you know, if you called them, you reached them. They didn't comment. So, Sam Cornetta, a barista and organizer at the Farmingville shop, said, "It doesn't really feel real. I don't think we imagined getting this far when we first started talking about it. We're now part of this big movement." Yeah.
Well,
you joined
cool.
up with Starbucks, you know? You knew you were getting to something big at that point.
That's really cool, though.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I was talking about this because there was some Starbucks involved in our space.
There was a Starbucks in our space.
It's true. And, you know, asked about it, when asked, I don't know if anyone asked, maybe I offered my opinion about Starbucks, but I think it's done good, maybe, I think, for just access to an approximation of a coffee shop. But I think it's also done a lot of bad because it's kind of insulted coffee culture. You know, like, when you think about it, the whole to-go cup, it just, I know, I just feel like it's not quite like what, you know, European coffee culture, like, you know, we talk about using proper mugs and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's just a lot of garbage and wasteful things to just have this disposable drink and you know, anyway, the point is, I think that when you go there and interact with employees now, that might be a part of a union, your interaction with them, I think, is a little bit, I would look at them differently, knowing that they had a little bit more say and aren't maybe as responsible for the insult I'm alleging to coffee culture that Starbucks might be.
To me, it seems as if independent coffee shops are popping up in various places. I'd like to think that resistance against a corporate giant like Starbucks is part of that. But I also know a lot of independent coffee shops shutting down is also because of that gigantic coffee corporation. I just think now there's more of a pushback, and people are basically more drawn to the mom-and-pop operations, as we all should be in every context. So, you know, seeing this is a good thing because there's such a mega corporation that, yeah, you have to be protected. You have to, because, you know, like any big corporation, they will screw you over first opportunity they can get.
Yeah, I think what Starbucks does well is, like, placement. They can end up in some really odd places and that wouldn't otherwise have something organically, maybe. I don't know if that's real. Maybe I'm fantasizing about that, but, or, you know, making it seem more important.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the variety. Like, the monoculture of a chain like that, it takes away a little bit. And they emphasize community and, like, being a, you know, an environment to hang out and stuff like that. But you can look.
Yeah, but they don't bring the community. They come to the community. The community is already there.
Yeah, but they got to emphasize, I think, more on the coffee, because you can do all kinds of different ways of selling coffee, but as long as it's good, you know. And I enjoy, like, all kinds of quirky places that people establish a coffee joint, or, mm-hmm. like, on, you know, on a train platform. I don't know. You know, if it's good coffee and you you do it well, like, people will be drawn to it.
It should be unique in every place. I remember when we were in Iceland, we found that coffee shop that was also a bookstore and a record shop. And that's when I came up with the idea that every coffee shop should also have books and records. And I just think that would be a really cool thing. And in Iceland, it's an awesome thing. But, you know, today you said something that completely threw me for a loop. You said you were taking a coffee break, and I somehow misunderstood that.
Oh, yeah. I'm taking a coffee break.
Meaning today. You're taking a break from coffee. I thought you were having a coffee break like 99% of the rest of the world would mean when they said something like that.
Yeah, all I would say is that I just wasn't going to have coffee today.
Use a different word.
All right.
That's my suggestion. Anyway, continuing with this story, which, yes, by the way, I'm still doing. The two other Long Island Starbucks, which I know everybody wants to know what they are, Westbury and Massapequa, they have voted to unionize since May. See, that's when they should have counted the votes. I'm not sure why it took so long here. Workers at a Great Neck store voted 6-5 against the union, which is a result that Workers United has challenged with the NLRB, alleging that management engaged in unfair labor practices. Interesting. Late last month, Starbucks workers in Wantagh submitted a petition to NLRB seeking a union vote. My question is, Stony Brook, there's a Starbucks on campus somewhere. I don't know.
It's hidden by the
is it still
bookstore.
It's in the library? Okay. I don't know. It wasn't a union, but then the union went away. Now the union's back. But somewhere there is a Starbucks on campus.
We should investigate.
I haven't been there in a while. But are you guys going to unionize? I mean, you know, you're students. You know, you always expect students to be at the forefront of things like this.
You know, I want to say there's probably several on campus. There's probably one in the hospital somewhere.
That's true. I think you're right.
Right? And
oh,
then,
my God.
So there's one behind the Performing Arts Center.
That must be so confusing.
There's probably another one somewhere
well,
in like
a Starbucks,
some dining hall or
there's
something.
There's a Starbucks in Stony Brook in the real world, meaning off campus. So that would be three Stony Brook Starbucks.
That's like the neighborhood Stony Brook Starbucks, yeah. But that's a lot. That's a good union.
You could all unite. You can make the Stony Brook Starbucks union.
Whatever. It can be a working title, too. If it's long, that's fine. Get your point across. You can refine it later once you're all together and working out other things, too.
Did I mention that Russia's leaving the space station in 2024?
Yeah.
I did. Okay.
And don't let the door...
No, that's mean. I want them to stay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I want
true.
Us to be invited to
oh,
there. They
yeah.
should... I'm not being sarcastic. I think they should. I think we should cooperate. We should, you know, science is something that's not political, and we learn so much more when we band together. But, okay, but China has a different a different thing going on. They are planning on having debris from a giant booster rocket fall to Earth next week. 23-ton Long March 5B rocket, which carries the Wenchun laboratory module, it took off Sunday, July 24th, that's 2 days ago, and the module successfully docked with China's orbital outpost. But the story doesn't end there. The its job completed, the rocket has gone into an uncontrolled descent toward Earth's atmosphere, and it's not clear where it will land. Bit of advice, no, that's not how you do it. You have to have some kind of control over these things. The uncontrolled descent marks the third time the country has been accused of not properly handling space debris from its rocket stage. It's a 20-ton metal object. Although it'll break up as it enters the atmosphere, numerous pieces, some of them quite large, will reach the surface, said an exasperated Michael Byers, a professor at the University of British Columbia and the author of a recent study on the risk of casualties from space debris. He is the right person to talk to on this. Space debris poses an extremely minimal risk to humans, but it's possible that larger parts could cause damage if it lands in inhabited regions. How long do you think we have before that happens? You know, a lot of the Earth isn't populated. A lot of it is water. But eventually, something, if we keep raining down debris from space, something's going to hit somebody or something important. Or somebody's pet. Or an elephant, or all sorts of potential hazards.
Do you think they'll have like a cap and trade system? You know, like where like okay, you took out that one thing that one time. Now we get that's one for us, just in case something you know falls over something similar in your neighborhood. And then the countries will just negotiate spacefaring junk credits.
Tied into a cryptocurrency, I think you might have something.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think there's definitely a blockchain solution here.
Oh, man.
CNN has reached out to the China Manned Space Agency for comment. See? They reached out to them. That's how you say it. You tried. They didn't say anything. You've got nothing to say. So, I don't know. When is this coming down? I guess within a week or two. Yeah. What comes up must come down. I'm learning that. Well, some of us already knew that, but okay. And finally, MTA, Metropolitan Transportation Authority, who runs all the trains around here, they say it could take another 13 years for the LIRR to get back all the riders it lost during the COVID-19 pandemic. The slow rebound will cost the transit agency billions of dollars that will have to be made up. Yeah, we're going to have to come up with that. Long Island Railroad's parent organization released its revised ridership forecast yesterday as part of the latest update to its financial plan. And there's a lot of red ink and negative
faces
in there.
How much do they need?
They need, oh boy.
I got money. What's up?
I don't think you have this much money. No. It's basically billions every year.
Okay.
Yeah, $15 billion. Okay, it's depressing.
Can I do a payment plan?
My advice in this situation is to use this opportunity where you don't have as many people getting in the way to expand the infrastructure, improve the infrastructure, you know, basically electrify the line out to Port Jefferson because that will make trains go a lot faster, reconnect lines like the Far Rockaway line and you know, expand. I would have said keep going out to... you know, to Eastern Long Island, but then they put a walking path there instead. But, you know, you could still do things. You can still add tracks. You can still add capacity and make it so that more people are taking trains than driving cars. You make it more appealing to people, then they'll come back. It might take a while, but that's what investment is. You have to build the infrastructure, and the people will come. And maybe that high-speed link, you know, under the Long Island Sound, to Boston with Amtrak. Maybe that can be drawn in at this stage as well. You know, less people getting in the way. Expand the infrastructure. It'll work out in the end.
You put a Starbucks on it, too.
You could, I suppose.
Make them pay just like a couple billion. You're good.
All right. Hey, we're out of time. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. And, of course, stay tuned to WUSB in Stony Brook. We still are at reduced power, but that's not going to last much longer. We're going to get our brand new transmitter in place, hopefully fairly soon this summer, and we're going to continue bringing you all the great programs that we are known for, including the one coming up right now after this outro by the show is by Finn, the outro is by our own Chris Phillips, who's in a band called Blue Black
that rocks.
Yeah, listen to him on midnight on Fridays at midnight, Friday nights at midnight, most Friday nights at midnight. But this is from their latest album, entitled Three, or I. I'm not exactly sure how you're supposed to say it. But, if you're driving, don't accelerate too much when you hear this. And we'll see you next week.
Turn it up.
Have I mentioned that I love Blue Black? You can find out more about Blue Black just by Googling Blue Black, one word, and checking them out. You'll find out lots of great music right there. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, of course.